the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, USA Today NFL Wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. And we have a special show, a special pair of shows that we're going to hear this week. This first show, episode 521, I have Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, but he will be joining us momentarily. But as we've done the last several years, Justin Higdon, Seth's co-host on the original Draft Breakdown podcast, he joins us for this next couple of episodes to talk about the NFL Combine as we wrapped things up. Man, Jay, how have things been? I know for you personally, it's been a whirlwind of a year between your professional life and then the draft life and the podcast. How is everything going?
Everything's going great. I mean, life is good, Jess, and I watched a lot of the Combine, most of it, I would say, which was fortunate because I haven't had a lot of time to dig deep this year. I'm kind of cramming, unlike years past where I was kind of better prepared for this show, but I still especially when it comes to some of the higher profile guys in this class and the receivers, I have plenty of takes, so we should be in good shape.
That's fantastic. Again, this is Justin Higdon, Seth's co-host on the original Draft Breakdown podcast, a show that you can find. There's two tiers of it. You've got free shows, but it is a show that you should definitely subscribe to. And they have on Patreon. There's two tiers you can join. At the $2 a month tier, you get their bonus shows. As of late, because of the crazy schedule that Justin's been having, most of the recent shows have been for the patron tier. And then on the $4 a month, you also get Seth and Justin's written content as well. It is a fantastic show to listen to, especially once the season wraps up. I'm subscribed to it all year, but I'll admit that I listen to most of the shows from January to April because they give some really good stuff. Did you guys have the Sully show yet?
We haven't yet, and we hope to. We'll get into our positional ranking shows here within the next month.
And those will be on the Patreon shows, right?
Well, usually Sully's show goes on iTunes and Spotify, okay. And that's the O-line show. That's one of our favorites. We are very hopeful that he can do it this year. So we'll be reaching out to him shortly. If not, we'll still try and, trudge through the offensive line because this is a really – I mean, we'll talk about this. This is a really athletic offensive line class, and it's also unique in a couple different ways.
And this edition of the show, episode 521, we will focus on the offensive prospects at the Combine. Otherwise, we'd be listening to, 3 hours of show probably. But we're going to
– I think that's what we did last year.
I think it's literally what we did. But we're going to split this into two shows so we don't have fatigue here. We will start off with the quarterbacks and the running backs. And in terms of the quarterbacks, I mean, there's not much to say, is there? Because year after year, we end up seeing very few quarterbacks doing the athletic testing. And, I mean, the throwing drills are interesting, but not even all the quarterbacks threw. And I get, at some level, the methodology, the logic to it, especially what Jaden Daniels says, if he does his workout now, there are so many teammates that he wants to make sure that they are getting the attention they need, not that they wouldn't get the attention, but if he's going to do all his workouts at the pro day, he knows that the teams are going to be sending their guys and they'll be able to get attention. And as Cardinals fans know, something like that can impact some of the scouting because we go back to 2015 and the Cardinals were interested in a particular Missouri pass rusher back in the day, and they were blown away by the other guy named Marcus Golden and ended up drafting him in the second round. So I don't mind that. This year's quarterback class, I think, for you, is it really kind of cut and dry? Is Caleb Williams that much above the other guys? And then is it just flavor of the month that when you talk about Drake May and then Jaden Daniels?
So for me, Caleb Williams, I think, is the quarterback one, but it took me some time to get there because he had a frustrating year, both, I think, from his own personal standpoint and I think from anybody watching him, because there were games where he really struggled, like the Notre Dame game. That one really comes to mind. There was the Arizona game that I think went into overtime.
Yeah.
And it really had no business going to overtime. But that just kind of shows you that a lot of what his perceived struggles were because his defense was just not very good.
So bad. So bad. Yeah. And I saw him firsthand against Arizona State. And his, I will say from my perspective, the game, he put up monster numbers in that game. Mm-hmm. He was, there was nothing impressive about what he did because he was thrown to guys that, well, one, they had, their running backs went for 80 gazillion yards and he didn't have to, he just had to put the ball into their hands and they were, Arizona State was so bad this year, but there's games you've seen the plays that he makes. I'm not like, I don't think he's a more special player than necessarily than Kyler Murray. And that's kind of like, he's a, for me, what he did at USA, what we've seen in college for me, he's basically a taller Kyler Murray, which maybe is a better thing for the NFL, but not quite as athletic, I'm guessing.
He's going to be pretty athletic. He's going to, he's probably not going to run for us.
I mean, what, like, why would he? Was, I mean, there's no upside for
him. He's going to be the first overall pick. At this point, I'm pretty confident in saying that. I believe in high school, he ran a 4.59, which is plenty fast for a quarterback. And you could see his elusiveness. That's not a question. I think the questions people have are, you know, he's not very tall. He's only 6'1", but we haven't seen that that's not necessarily going to affect somebody's draft stock. When you look at Young getting picked last year, Bryce Young going, it was a mistake that he went ahead of Stroud, but he still went one overall. And then, you know, we've seen Baker Mayfield go one overall. Kyler went one overall. It's kind of a mixed bag, but it's still not a deterrent for the NFL draft community. When a guy does some special things, and Caleb Williams certainly does that. I think when you watch him, you have some concerns about the way he extends plays and if that translates, but I think it does with him. I think it will. He is really tough too when he takes some big shots. I know there were people making fun of him, and I think Seth and I even did a little bit on our show about going into the stands. At the end of that, was it Washington? The Washington loss. We went into the stands and he was kind of sitting with his mom and covering his face with a towel. There are some unique things about his personality.
Yeah.
That
well, that'll be that, like, for the hyper masculine NFL might be a little bit hard to deal with, but he's just a weird dude. So. He's just a weird dude.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm old, so I go back to, like, Jim McMahon. He was a weird dude, and he was not as good of a quarterback when he played for the Bears, and they went to a Super Bowl. There's been eccentric quarterbacks in the league before, so this isn't a first time. So when I watched him, when I watched Caleb Williams, it's really undeniable that he has the arm strength and the athleticism that NFL teams crave. And I think he really – The fact that he stuck around the combine, even though he didn't work out, even though he didn't throw, but he stuck around. He did interviews. He was engaging. His personality was shining through. He was encouraging his fellow participants in the drills. I think that kind of stuff goes a long way. And then you've heard from his teammates at this point, his coaches, and they all have good things to say about him. So yeah. I think there was a lot of frustration around the USC program this year. They lost 5 games after a hot start. And I think that kind of clouded the evaluation at some point. But I still like Caleb Williams as the number one quarterback in this class. Is he the number one overall player? Probably not for me, but
quarterback
is,
tax. I mean, that's
– he's at least quarterback 1A for me.
So for the Cardinals, we're not looking at quarterbacks. And, right. And the truth is that the only thing that comes up is if – one of the top 3 teams that needs a quarterback ends up getting a Justin Fields or another quarterback on the trade or free agent market, and they either trade, I don't like whether they keep a pick and draft Marvin Harrison. I'm more interested right now because there's so much talk about the three quarterbacks at the top. Was there anything encouraging from the workouts at the combine and anything disappointing from the guys that worked out? From what I saw and heard is that by far Michael Penix threw the ball the best, but that overall we've had dazzling quarterback drills. I mean, like, you know, when CJ Stroud was doing it, even Desmond Ridder, when he was at the combine, really wowed everyone. This seemed to be, for me, at least in the coverage, pretty underwhelming in terms of quarterbacks.
Kind of, but also you saw one of the questions, for example, about Bo Nix is he threw so high of a percent of his throws behind the line of scrimmage or within 10 yards, and which is why you saw that giant inflated completion percentage that he had this year. He had an opportunity at this combine to throw the ball down the field more, and it was a mixed bag for me from what I saw, but it's still, you could still see the arm strength, and there's a lot of teams, my understanding is a lot of teams like his leadership. He's married, he's mature, he's been around for a long time. He has the most career starts of any quarterback.
But both Penix and Nix, I remember listening to y'all's show when you compared them, is, you know, like, there is so much tape on both of them.
Yeah.
Right. So much tape.
And you have tape from two different schools on both of them too, which is interesting because you could see, you know, Penix did throw the ball really well at the combine, and my understanding, I wasn't at the Senior Bowl, I haven't been there for a long time, but my understanding was he threw the ball well. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think he was at the Senior Bowl, wasn't he?
We'll have to check that.
Anyway, like, maybe I'm thinking about just his tape, because one of the things is, you know, he's got Romo Dunze. He's a highly rated wide receiver, Daniel Jeremiah, 3 overall on his board. And when I watched Odunze, I actually grew to appreciate Penix more because he's very accurate down the field. And he does have a strong arm. He's lefty, which is a little
bit weird. It's
unusual.
It's a left, like, I will say, no matter how good a ball they throw, lefties look weird throwing the ball.
And it's unusual to have a lefty starter. Tua is the only one in the league.
Matt Leinart. Boomer Esiason.
Right. Boomer Esiason was one of the best. Steve Young, obviously, Hall of Famer. But it's unusual, and a lot of receivers aren't used to catching passes from lefties. So we'll see how that works. You know, I think the guy who's gaining a lot of traction from the combine, and rightly or wrongly, is J.J. McCarthy. And I have a theory about him, because if you look at his combine workout, he struggled right off the bat throwing to his left. And that was something that was really kind of the death knell of Mitch Trubisky's starting career in the NFL. He just never could really make it work throwing to his left. McCarthy was showing that at the combine too. And then he kind of settled down and his throws were more accurate. There are people that really love him, and people that think he's overrated. There are people that are saying he could be quarterback 3, which I think is kind of nuts, because the guy who's falling in these scenarios is May, who,
and does that,
to me, I don't understand.
Sense. Is that just because he was out of sight, out of mind?
No, there's other things people are saying about him that, you know, Lance Zierlein for NFL.com has been pretty critical of May, spotlighting some of his tougher throws. But if you look at May's situation, especially this year, he didn't have top-notch receivers, top-notch weapons on offense. He did have a very good running back in Amarian Hampton, who's a sophomore we'll probably be talking about next year. But it's unusual, especially given the fact that I've seen May's athleticism question, which is really strange to me, because he's going to run in the 4.5s if he runs. Like, I know on good authority that he runs a sub 4.6, and at 6'4", 223, there's really nothing. You look at the comparisons that people have made to him, to Justin Herbert, to Josh Allen, he's not quite as big as Allen, obviously, but he's kind of similar to Herbert.
Right.
And he's got that easy arm strength. He's got that athleticism. I don't really get why you drop a guy like that after seeing what those two guys have been able to do in the league. If you think he's anywhere near those guys, he should probably be the quarterback too. And he's going to be my quarterback too. Because the other thing is he's the youngest one of these top guys that we're discussing, except for McCarthy. But McCarthy's probably thrown the fewest passes. And I have more questions about him than I do about May.
I keep hearing, like, the new thing is he might sneak into the top 10. How real do you think that that's going to be?
I think it's real. I think it's real that he could sneak into the top 10 because the NFL does crazy stuff. And could we see Drake May fall to quarterback 4? I think absolutely we could.
That'd be crazy.
A lot of the big draft guys are saying Jaden Daniels is consensus quarterback 2. And I think you and Seth probably have strong opinions about that because he was around at Arizona State for a while before he went to LSU. I think people are starting to kind of hang their hats on the fact that Burrow came out of LSU after transferring, and he had a bunch of highly drafted receivers too. But the difference between Burrow and Daniels, another similarity actually, is that they both will turn 24 in December of their rookie years. But one of the differences is Jaden Daniels, he doesn't throw down the middle that much. And the numbers down the middle are not good in comparison to the other quarterbacks in this class. So to me, that's kind of a flag. I still think he's quarterback 3. But to me, he's more like a late first, second round guy.
Daniels is hard for me because his freshman year, he looked really good. His freshman year was super promising. He's kind of honestly, because he came into Arizona State. He came to Arizona State right at the same time as Kyler came to the Cardinals. You know, like that he's kind of that same mold. He's tallish, but he's built very lean. He moves really well. He has a good arm, but he never improved at Arizona State, and I'm very happy for him to see the success that he had at LSU, but it's incredibly frustrating with the program here. Is how you had a Heisman talent. In the building, and he never improved upon his freshman year. Obviously, better program, better coaching, better talent around him.
Offense that they designed for him, I mean, it was so heavily involved with his running ability. And I will say this, I don't think there's been a quarterback that runs as well as he does since Lamar Jackson. And I would
not
say,
to say that they run the same, but he is a... He's a strong. He's not as fast as say a Kyler or Lamar, mm-hmm. but he's elusive. He's a very elusive runner.
He is, but at the same time, he takes really huge hits.
And Seth has joined us. So he's hit the show. If you hadn't ever heard, Seth has joined us on the show now. Seth Cox, my co-host from RhythmsBirds.com, and now it's officially basically a bonus episode of the original draft breakdown podcast with me.
Yeah, and to your point, Jess, like he takes huge hits. He's not as athletic as Lamar, but here's the thing that gets me with his running is the huge hits. Yes, obviously huge issue, but the thing with Lamar and Kyler, they get nicked up or they have health issues or whatever you want to call it. And it's typically tissue stuff, like from running so much, being so explosive, change of direction, things like that. The problem you have with Jaden Daniels is the shots he took in college, that's not going to fly in the NFL. Like he's going to
break his ribs.
It's probably hyperbole, but he might die. Like
that is hyperbole, Seth.
let's not have that. We literally kind of had that happen on the field, but not a quarterback.
Right.
But.
And so you just look at him and it's just like one of those things. It's like, man, you can't do that in the league. Like, is that really what your plan is? And so we'll see how it works out for him. But it's baffling that he's number two. But there was some murmurs, and I don't know if you saw those, and I can't find the tweets now. So I'll continue to look for them. But did you see the talk about Cliff and Drake May and that Drake May is Cliff's guy type of thing?
No kidding.
I haven't seen that. I've actually heard the opposite, that, or I guess an alternate theory that Daniels is why they brought in Cliff.
Yeah, that makes sense stylistically, but there are other connections. It's not Cliff. There's other connections for May and the Commanders, but to me it's not Cliff. But maybe he really, really would like to coach one of those big-bodied quarterbacks.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds, because that's kind of the whole juxtaposition of the draft at this point, is that, you know, it feels almost set in stone. I mean, it's never set in stone until it's actually set in stone, but it feels almost set in stone that it's going to be Caleb at one, right? And so
yeah, that's what I said earlier. Yeah.
Then the draft kind of starts at two, and it's starting to feel, like you said, more and more like it's Jaden Daniels. If it's Jaden Daniels at two, that's where things get interesting, because I think for Justin and I both, I don't know if there's that much of a disparity for Justin and I between Caleb and Drake May.
No, to me, there's not. I mean, I was just telling Jess, I mean, I said Caleb was quarterback 1A. So
right. That, and I'm kind of on the same page with that.
Yeah. Like, May is 1B to me.
And so you look at that. And so if the NFL doesn't see it that way, that, you know, that's up to them. And obviously this is the same NFL that took, you know, Tua Tagovailoa before Justin Herbert. It took Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold before Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, like
Bryce Young before CJ Stroud.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. So like the NFL is wrong just as much as we are. And
probably more.
So the other quarterbacks, did anyone help themselves? I heard, you know, Spencer Rattler was impressive at the Senior Bowl. The things I heard were that it was a little disappointing. Did anyone kind of hurt their status, like where they're going to get drafted? Because quarterbacks, after the top guys, it's kind of like how teams view them. Because you have guys sneaking in the first round that are like, why? And then they end up in the second round or third round. But who are the guys that help or hurt themselves? Because the Cardinals, with as many picks as they have, and I think I don't see them trading their fourth pick, but I see two likely picks, potentially, like that number 27 and number 35, could be picks that are targeted for teams looking for that next tier of quarterback that they want to get up for, but they weren't willing to, or you get the better teams or the teams that didn't have a pick at the top 10 to kind of move up for them.
So I think Rattler is kind of, he's an interesting case, because a couple of years ago when he was a redshirt sophomore before he transferred, he was a lot of people's quarterback one. And even after the Senior Bowl, I think people were putting him as a potential quarterback four or five over Nix and Penix, because he threw the ball well. And he does. If you watch the games, he makes throws the other guys don't. But he also turns the ball over more. So they really put him in a position where he, especially at South Carolina, where he had to kind of carry things at some points. And then you have those games where, like against Tennessee in 2022, he threw six touchdowns and they pulled off a big upset. So you see that there, but he's 6 feet tall. He's the shortest of all these top quarterbacks. He was last in all the drills. And I know, as you said earlier, Jess, the quarterbacks don't compete. A lot of the quarterbacks don't compete in these drills. But I think 4.95 for a 40 was pretty disappointing, because you think of Rattler as being more athletic than that and being faster. And so now you know he's not even like Baker Mayfield level of athleticism. And that's going to be a problem, because people are going to run him down. So I think Rattler, he hurt himself to a degree. I still think he'll go around the fourth round, but he's now he's clearly behind Knicks and Penix for most of these teams. If you want a guy who helped himself, and this was obvious going in because this is the type of event that the combine is, it's Joe Milton, because he just looks like he's built in a lab. He's 6'5", 235. He has giant hands, long arms, and in like the easiest arm strength that you have in the entire class.
He'll easily be a day three pick for someone in
at least. There might be a team that takes him in the third round because his arm is explosive. It's the best arm in the class. Track record's not great because he really only started when they tried to start him at Michigan, he flamed out. When he transferred to Tennessee, he was backing up Hendon Hooker, and he filled in admirably when Hooker got hurt with the ACL last year. And he threw 10 touchdowns, no picks. Then this year he was a starter. He had a pretty good year statistically without the weapons that he lost with Cedric Tillman and Jalin Hyatt going to the NFL. But and the other thing is Joe Milton can run. He had an 81-yard touchdown run this year that where he was clocked on the GPS over 20 miles an hour. So the guy can move. He's got everything. If he was 3 years younger, he would be a first-round pick with what he's put on tape. But he's not. He's going to be 24. And so, actually, he turns 24 on March 6th. So, like, right now. And that I think that's what's working against him. It's like, why haven't you taken that next step? So in a way, he's kind of like Cardale Jones when he finally came out. I think he's going to go in that range. And Milton is more athletic, but I don't think he's quite as good of a passer. But it was both a couple of guys that are huge with easy arm strength, and that's enticing. So somebody's going to try and make it work with Joe Milton. I think he might get drafted ahead of Rattler.
Whatever happened with Keaton Slovis? Like, what a weird career that he had going into that freshman year at USC, ended up at Pitt, ended up at BYU. He's got talent. He's got athleticism. What what happened to Keaton Slovis, and why didn't he work out in college? What does he look like for the pros?
So he was a Senior Bowl invite last year, and then he opted to go back to school and transfer. He had a great combine as far like he was the fastest quarterback. He ran a 4.55, and he's 6'3", 223. Like, he's got really good size, good enough hands, and he's still pretty young. He's only compared to these other quarterbacks, like, he's younger by a year than guys like Penix and Nix. But he's a guy the NFL is very much still interested in. They keep inviting him things. He was a Shrine Bowl guy this year. He didn't make it into the Senior Bowl. But the fact that he was invited to the combine tells you the NFL is still in on him. I think he's going to be a 5th to 7th round pick. I would probably not draft him. I don't think he, outside of that freshman year, I just don't think he produced very well. Yeah. And he's been around the block to 3 schools,
right,
between USC, Pitt, and BYU. But I think the NFL is still in on him. And he's probably like the guy that if there was – If you're brainstorming with the GM and the high-level scouts of an NFL team, they're probably in that room going, could this guy be Brock Purdy? Where we can get him in the 7th round, he might be a starter. I think that's the mindset. I don't think he will be a starter, but I think he will start a couple games in the NFL because somebody's going to take a chance on him.
Yeah, we've spent way too long on quarterbacks, and the Cardinals have no interest in, like, they drafted a quarterback last year, Clayton Tune. Honestly, I thought that was a waste of the pick. But if he ends up being their backup for a few years, hey, that's cool. It'd be wild if they drafted another one. Let's talk about the running backs. Who's the clear cut? Is there a clear cut number one after the combine?
I'll let Seth take this one first.
Yeah, I mean, it just clear cut's probably a strong word. But for me, I think there's been guys that kind of put themselves above others. The first one I would say is Trey Benson. Trey Benson out of Florida State had an electric combine, and then he's got incredible production to back it up. You know, one of the great travesties that we'll always have, and I don't think that they would have won anything, is going to be Jordan Travis getting hurt this year and Florida State being left out of the yes. playoffs because they are, I mean, they're going to produce probably five.
In between Benson, Keon Coleman, Jared Verse.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably five or six offensive and defensive draft picks. So maybe up to 12 picks in this draft this year. Benson came in at 6'2", 216. So size-wise, he fits the profile. Like I said, production-wise, the last 2 years, he's averaged over 6 yards a carry at Florida State, 9 touchdowns last year, 14 touchdowns this year on the ground. And then he tested insane. I mean, he ran a 4.39 40 at that size. He had a 10.2 broad jump at that size. He's just he just kind of gives you everything that you want from a running back. And so the biggest question is always going to be, why didn't he produce more? It's, I mean, for me, when you're only going to
carries a couple of years,
when you're only yeah, and then this year he had two more carries this year than he did last year. Like,
yeah, they were. I mean, I think that part of that is load management, right?
Right, and so he had 156 carries this year. This year he actually looked, you know, very good catching the ball, 20 receptions for 227 yards and a touchdown. Like, it's over 6 yards a touch and 15 touchdowns from scrimmage is great. I thought Benson kind of separated himself from a production and testing standpoint. Now, my favorite back of the group didn't run, didn't do anything, and so it makes it a little harder. But man, I love Braylon Allen.
He did this guy.
He did, yeah. He did jump, and he jumped well.
His jumps were not great, though.
They were average. Yeah,
they were average. They were average. Yeah.
But I mean, let's be honest, for 6'1", 235, his jumps were good.
Like, yeah, I think people are going to compare him to like the bigger backs. Like, if you watch my tape, Seth, and maybe you'll agree or disagree, but there were times when you're like, man, that guy looks like Derrick Henry running the ball.
He does, and he's a little shorter, obviously, at 6'1", but 235 pounds.
And nobody can tackle him. He runs through tackles. He has good feet. But yeah, I wish he would have run the 40, because even if he would have, anything under 4.6 would have put him in great position.
And I, with Braylon Allen, and maybe it's bias, so this could be 100% what that is. I see James Conner. That's just what I see. And he's going to be a better athlete, but Conner came in at 6'1", 233. He ran a 4.65. So to your point, anything under 4.6 would have been better. But yeah. Conner only had a 29-inch vertical, so not great. He had a 113-inch broad, which is right.
I think your son
there.
Has higher than a 29-inch vertical.
Yeah, and so yeah, and then actually two of them, but yeah,
yeah.
and then only 20, you know, and what's Conner's calling card? His power
touchdowns.
Yeah, that too, but only 20 reps on the bench. I mean, Allen put up 26. So I really like the athletic comparison of James Conner, because he's been such a good runner. He's been so successful as a pro. And maybe that's why I'm caught up. The other thing is, and Justin can, you know, vouch for this, it is insane that this guy cannot even drink alcohol yet. Like, right. Legally buy alcohol.
He just turned 20 in January. I mean, this is the youngest. I think he's the youngest player in the entire draft.
That makes sense, especially we're, you know, you guys talk age every year. Last year you talked age, and I think what this year is kind of like the first year where everybody's old, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's the most glaring year where so many guys are old, and especially across there are so many good offensive 24. Linemen. We'll talk about. Yeah, I know. We're really old. But especially when you look at the offensive line, defensive line, guys, there's so many guys that have transferred and then got their footing at a new program. It's very unique. I think that this kind of thing is going to slow down over the next couple of years, because this was the last year of the extra COVID year of eligibility. But so that's why where a guy like Allen comes out and only being 20 years old on draft day and going to be play his entire rookie year as a 20-year-old, this guy, and you look at him, if you've seen pictures of him as a 17-year-old when he went to Wisconsin, he looked like a grown man. I mean, he is so well built. He's got good feet. He's still kind of learning to play the running back position because when he went to Wisconsin, originally he was an athlete, so they didn't know what to do with him. And he got pushed into running back duty because of injuries, and then he stuck there. So Allen could be, you know, he could end up being the best running back this class. I'm with Seth, though, that Trey Benson set himself apart as the running back one.
And then I think you have to acknowledge Blake Corum.
I don't have to.
Well, no, you don't have to.
For those of you unaware, Jay's all about Ohio State, so you can't trust him with any Michigan prospects.
I actually like Corum a lot, though. He's a really good leader. He's a tough guy. I mean, he's the kind of guy that you would love on your team and you would want to punch in the face if you were on the other team.
And his production is obviously elite. We can't, you know, but he tested better than everyone really expected, didn't he?
He actually tested really well at the opening when he was coming in. So he actually ran a little bit slower, but that's to be expected because he's heavier. He had the knee injury a couple of years ago. But as far as like 35 and a half inch vertical jump, you've got some explosiveness. He had 27 reps at 225. The guy's strong as an ox, and you could see that in his running style. And he's super quick. The shuttles played that out too. He'll be 24 in November. So I don't think it matters too much outside of the quarterback position or maybe like receiver with the age, but to Jess's point, he's one of the old guys. He's just really small. He's 5'8", 205. So he's so tough.
Right. And to me, and we've given this comparison, I think now for 2 years on this guy, he's Ray Rice. I mean, he's not as
without the off the field.
Yeah. But he wasn't as fast as Rice. Rice ran a 4.42, but Corum jumped better and he had a better shuttle. So, I mean, he doesn't have the straight line speed, but he ended up, you know, having better measurables, you know. So
if you watch Corum in the drills too, he just looks so natural the way, like the way he anticipates the hole. I mean, he's very smart. He's a very smart runner, and he's going to be a coach's dream. The thing is, this guy is he's very small, so I still think he's going to be. How high do you think he's going to get picked?
Well, so let me ask you this, Justin, and Jess, you can feel free to chime in on this. When does the first running back go?
I think second round, Benson.
You do think somebody goes in the second round?
I think Benson will go in the second round. It's okay. Very unusual. We've seen first rounds go by without running backs, but I don't remember the last time I've seen two rounds go by. Even one of the worst running back classes I can remember, and I don't remember the exact year, but Carlos Hyde was the first. I think he was the first running back picked, and it was still second round, if I recall.
This is weird in terms of what people are saying about the running back position. There's not an elite guy, and it's deep at like other premium positions because you're deep at receiver, you're deep at tackle, you're deep. There's so many good linemen, and so yeah, I think it'd be a shock, like more shocking than Jahmyr Gibbs last year. I think it'd be shocking if anyone goes first round, but you know, you never know. You know,
if anyone did, I think it would be Benson because yeah, with the 4.39
time, speed makes sense.
And at 2.16, right? We've seen this before, but the thing is, like when he ran that 4.39, and when I watched him, I thought Breece Hall, but he didn't test as well across the board as Breece Hall. He doesn't have the accolades, the production that Hall had, and Hall was still a second round pick. So, I think Benson goes late second. And that's probably the first guy.
My favorite for the Cardinals, Jess, is obviously Braylon Allen, but my second favorite is the Great White Hope, Dylan Lobb, out of New Hampshire. This kid, I thought he did everything that you needed to see, and he had a good Senior Bowl, and then, you know, he comes out here and has a good combine. I mean, the 4.54 is what it is, but 37-inch vert, 4.02 shuttle, like, it shows explosiveness. It shows great change of direction. I think lob, obviously he's a small school guy, but like if you're talking day three and Allen ends up going before, you know, you're comfortable taking a running back, I think lob's a great fit and could end up being a guy that, you know, will he be a guy that carries load? Who knows? But I think he'll be a great change of pace back and a guy that gives you really good carries when he gets on the field.
And isn't that kind of what the league's going back to? We had kind of the specialized back, then we've had a few like big time feature backs, but even in college, like especially this year, doesn't it feel like that more and more that they're going to be more specialized backs in the pros?
I think there's paying special attention to in the college ranks, especially at the bigger Power Five schools, about load management. We're going to see it this year coming up with Ohio State, with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. You have two of the probably top running backs in next year's class, and they're on the same team. So they're going to have to find ways to balance that. But I think there is a lot of specialization, especially at the running back position. We don't see a ton of bell cows. And even when a team like Buffalo, where James Cook throughout the year was clearly their best running back, but they worked overtime to try and spell him with other guys like Latavius Murray and Leonard Fournette, even where they were like, we got to give this guy a break. So Lob is interesting because there were some teams that worked him out at receiver too, or that requested right. that he work out receiver. So there are some teams that look at him because he's such a good receiver out of the backfield. Maybe he can even play slot receiver. And I still think he's probably going to go fifth round or later, though.
Is he, you know, Chase Edmonds like in that sense?
Yeah, I think Edmonds is a good comp. Yeah, I think
that's fair.
Yeah. And you know, obviously, he didn't work
out. I'll
do
the white-on-white comp, Rex Burkhead, maybe.
Yeah, and Burkhead had a long career of being successful in, you know, those situations, and I think that's a fair one. But, you know, the nice thing is this running back class is like the receiver class. It's just not as obviously talented, but there is literally just pick your flavor type of thing. You know, you've got the big backs in Audric Estime and Braylon Allen. You've got the elusive backs in guys like, you know, Ray Davis and Trey Benson. And then you've got fun guys that we don't know what's going to happen in, like a Jonathan Brooks, who was considered by many to be running back one in this class before the injury. Right. So
I think if you watch him, there are some concerns there. I think he's very straight line-ish and just not as elusive as some of these. I think that for Brooks especially, I think the numbers are a little bit juiced from the offense. And when we get into receivers, we can say why.
And let's move on to that. Coming up next on the Rise of Searhead podcast, Spencer of Cardinals Talk and the Weblets. Let's move on to the pass catchers, wide receivers, and tight ends. That's coming up next on Rise of Searhead. We're back on the Rise of Searhead podcast, especially our Cardinals Talk. Well, we spent a lot of time on quarterbacks and running backs, when the truth is, at least you Cardinals fans, you want to talk receiver. You want to hear us talking about the wide receivers. You want to hear us talking about the three guys at the top. You know, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze. But this is a very deep class of receivers, and it looks like there are playmakers that can be had all over the draft. Not that the Cardinals want to wait to find them, especially when you've got guys like Harrison at the top.
Yeah, and I think when you look at this class and you see, you know, the top, and somebody brought it up today, and it's interesting because I think with Marvin Harrison, you're getting prospect fatigue, right? Like,
apparently,
you have a guy that was the Biletnikoff winner as a true sophomore, and then you know, we've
I think he was actually he was a runner up as a sophomore. I think he won it as the junior, right?
Oh, okay, yeah. And then you know, a two-time All-American. And then you look at his numbers, and that's what, you know, that's what's impressive to me. You look at his numbers, and there's not a soul on this planet that would say that he's had the same quarterback level of quarterback play that he did last year with CJ Stroud, right? Where he put up 77 receptions for just under 1300 yards and 14 touchdowns. And he comes back this year with Kyle McCord, and he puts up 67 catches for just over 1200 yards and 14 touchdowns. Yeah. And actually has more yards per reception in that time.
He did the same thing with a Syracuse quarterback, essentially.
Right. And yeah. And you look at what he did this year, and it's just so, like, to me it's such a no-brainer that I just feel like people are really trying to twist themselves into pretzels to be like, oh, this guy in Malik Nabers. And by the way, I think Malik Nabers is really good. I do. But
yep.
But you're overthinking it, right? Like, if you look across the board, you've got 2 years of elite production, one with a great quarterback, one with a very mid quarterback. Like, you've got elite production at a school that produces great wide receivers. He's the most talented. He's got size. He's got athleticism. He's oozing athleticism. He's got playmaking skills. And you can look at the film. There's even stuff that he can do better, and he's still producing at that level. He has a Hall of Fame fop. This is such an easy decision, but, you know, I think for the purpose of leading up for 4 months of draft coverage, you have to. You can't just keep saying, yeah, it's easy. It's Harrison. But, yeah. Like, well, that doesn't mean he'll be the best. Doesn't mean he'll be the best, obviously, but it's the easiest to bet on, right? And then that's what the draft comes out. It's the easiest player to bet on when you're talking about a receiver.
I think it's the easiest player to bet on in the entire draft. You went from people saying he was the number one player in the draft all season long to how he might be wide receiver three. And for all the reasons that you just mentioned, he's clearly wide receiver one. And, you know, if I'm a GM and I need a quarterback, I'm obviously going to take one ahead of him, especially when you have Caleb Williams, Drake May in this class. But Harrison, to me, if he goes to four at Arizona, it's a no-brainer to me. And some people were making fun of his arm length. It was just shy of 32 inches. That's, you know, that's an average arm length for a receiver. But you also have the fact that he's 6'3". So there's no problem with his catch radius. You can see that very clearly on tape. The other thing about Marvin Harrison, he's one of the, I've talked about this on the show on the original Draft Breakdown podcast. He looks like he's made out of rubber because he never gets really hurt. And knock on wood here, but he's had some injuries where it looked like, oh, man, that guy is really hurt. And they tape it up and he's back in the game. The only guy I've seen like that in across professional sports is LeBron. And when a guy
when Bijan should have been paralyzed for life.
When he was bending backwards. Yeah, so we're talking about like the most elite, like natural athletes and guys that keep themselves in such great condition. Obviously, Marvin Jr. has learned a lot from his father and in a good way. I mean that in a good way. Not any of the off-field stuff.
I was going to say not gunplay.
Not the car wash thing. Right.
So, but he's clearly not the hardened guy that his father is. And I know some people will, you know, maybe some people will question his want to. But we look at guys even like Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald needed to take another step in his development. So he was an elite receiver coming out of college. But he didn't become an elite player until a few years later when, you know, he was challenged. And Harrison still needs that. But yeah, it's not this. If it weren't for Harrison, then you could talk Nabers or Odunze. But that's what's great about this draft. But yeah, it feels like, would someone really take Malik Nabers over Marvin Harrison? And if they did, why?
I don't know the answer to that. And, you know, my philosophy is take the layups. And Harrison is a layup in this. Like, he's a guy who won't fail. I'm not saying Nabers won't, or not saying Nabers will fail, but, you know, Harrison showed up to combine. Yeah, he dipped out on the press junket, but
nobody in the NFL cares about that.
Nobody does.
The only people that matters for are fans and people like me and Seth. That's literally right. It. We get content out of that, and instead we got a content saying that he didn't talk because he talked to teams. By all reports, he had great interviews with teams, and so there's no issue with the mental side of things. He is of the athlete that, you know, the report that came out. So he's not even training for the combine drills like that. He's just doing football work. He's a rare athlete that is able to do that because he has nothing to prove. You can see
and
his
athleticism. He's a gamer. They had to take his helmet away from him when he got the concussion against Georgia 2 years ago. They had to take his helmet away. He was trying to get back in. Like I said, we've seen plays where it looked like he turned his ankle and he got taped up and went back in. He's not trying to duck anything. For some reason, Nabers didn't even weigh in, and he took the lead from maybe his quarterback because Daniels didn't either. I don't really get that. I don't really understand why you don't at least weigh in, but we've seen that Devontae Smith did it a couple of years ago, and it didn't hurt him at all. So,
right. I always feel like – because the combine gives you the most normalized uniform measurements, right? And
I think so.
And in pro days, like teams, they should try to showcase their athletes, and so that's why they're always listed as bigger than they are because they're listed their heights are listed when they got cleats on, but nobody knows that. And but beyond Harrison. Nabers, Adunze, Brian Thomas, just how good is this group of receivers? How many do you think are going to be first-round receivers, and how many are impact players in the NFL probably?
It's an awesome group of receivers. I love this class. Seth and I have talked about this being the best class since 2014 when you had Mike Evans and Nuke, Hopkins. You know, some guys didn't work out at quite as well, but you had Odell Beckham in that class. Am I right, Seth?
Yeah, it's different this year because we're getting size back.
We are, and that's pretty unique compared to the last few years where you had guys like Smith and Jigba, Jordan Addison, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, a bunch of, you know, smaller, skinnier guys, Devontae Smith, but they're still very clearly good, and they've been very good NFL players so far. But this year you got Brian Thomas and A.D. Mitchell, and those guys, I was telling Seth on our show that we released on Tuesday that those Rick Spielman was on with the First Pick podcast for CBS Sports, and he was the first guy I heard, former GM, of course, first guy I heard saying that Brian Thomas might actually challenge Odunze for wide receiver 3, and I think that's not far-fetched because you have Brian Thomas a couple months younger than Odunze at 6'3", 209, running a 4.33. You've got A.D. Mitchell, who's exactly the same age as Brian Thomas, at 6'2", 205, running a 4.34. Both guys really productive. I love Mitchell's sideline work. He has the sideline work of like a T. Higgins or a Cortland Sutton where he gets both feet down. He knows exactly where he is on the field in the end zone. Really helps for the red zone threat aspect of it. And you see them on tape gaining more separation than Odunze has. So I think there's a legitimate argument to be made that there is a challenge for wide receiver 3. And I think that's probably not a common take, but I think, and I'm not, I say this not to disparage Odunze, but we saw Lance Zierlein come out with a mock draft where Odunze went 12 overall, which is still really high, but.
And the team, I believe any team that gets Odunze it will not be disappointed and will probably be thrilled. They will absolutely be thrilled he's there.
Right. I don't think he's – I think he actually probably has the safest floor. And I think Seth and I talked about that on our show earlier this week. But does he have the highest upside? And so it depends what you want. Do you want a safer guy? Odunze is probably your guy. Do you want to swing for the upside? Because I think Thomas and Mitchell are both safe as well, but in a different way. And might have a little bit more growing pains going into the league. But I like all those guys. And I think as many as 7 could go in the first round. And Daniel Jeremiah, I guess famously at this point, has 12 receivers in his top 50. And I think the record for receivers in the top 50 is 11. I could see 12. I could see that record going down because this is a really stacked class.
And the great thing is that you can get, because it's so deep, you can find guys that will be playmakers in NFL all over the draft. You know, you're talking about Harrison. Here's one of three like guys that come from NFL bloodlines. You got Luke McCaffrey, who just beat his brother Christian's 40. You've got Brendan Rice. With size, you know, he's a little speedier than his dad, reportedly, you know, we never actually saw that real 40 time, but this is such, you've got Rice, you've got, and not even like the Washington receiver, Jalen Polk also gives you some nice playmaking ability.
I like Polk quite a bit. When you watch Michael Penix highlights, and you'll see Polk seems to be more open in his matchups than Odunze, which is not, again, to rip on Odunze. He's always on the best corners, always on him, and he still makes the catch no matter how contested it is. But it's Polk was definitely a go-to guy, and they had McMillan too. So it's a really good receiver class.
Tez Walker, Troy Franklin. Now, there is, like, if you need a receiver – and the Cardinals need receivers. This is a great year to do it. And with this, is that, would you, if we were to talk about this down the line in our drift shoes, could you see the Cardinals potentially taking, like, would it make sense to take a pair of receivers this year?
Yeah, I think so. And you mentioned a couple that makes sense. I mean, if you go Marvin Harrison early with Michael Wilson on the outside, and you know, then you look at who fits. And, you know, a guy like Roman Wilson out of the slot makes a lot of sense. He's been really productive, and he fits into that. Another guy that could fit into that, it's like a Jamari Thrash out of Louisville.
Jermaine Burton is another one. I feel like he and Roman Wilson are like carbon copies of each other.
And then another guy that really is intriguing, but you know, he's one of the tiny guys, but he had a insane combine in terms of athletic testing, was Malik Washington out of Virginia. And he's probably, you think day three on him, right, Justin? Like he's not going to go early at 5'8", 190, right?
Yeah, I think Washington's a day three guy, but had a really good combine and has a lot of speed and quickness. And yeah, I mean, this is so deep. We didn't even mention Ladd McConkey, who,
oh my gosh,
I've been kind of lukewarm on him, but I've kind of backed off that stance because I think there's a really good chance he's one of the 6 or 7 guys that sneaks into late first round. I wouldn't take him there. He's a day two guy for me, but just the route running is exceptional and the hands are exceptional. And then he run a 4.39. And then you've got guys, big draft guys, are talking up Ricky Pearsall from Florida, who was a transfer from your guy's backyard.
And he's a weapon, because you can do more than just, he's got the talent to do things on trick plays because he can throw the ball. You can, like, Ricky Pearsall, I was really sad when he left Arizona State because he was really, really fun to watch. But yeah, that 4.41.
We didn't even mention the souped up Marquise Brown of Xavier Worthy, right? Like,
yeah,
there's just there's just so much talent.
I've never seen a guy run a 4.2 and then get so much shade because the other guys that ran that fast were not good football players. But you look at Worthy, and Seth and I talked about this on our show. Which of the other guys that ran sub 4.25 had 1,000 yards as a true freshman? They say Worthy has problems with his hands. He's had drops. Well, in 2022, he was playing through a broken hand. Of the games people talk about is that bowl game where he's a true sophomore and he has three drops with a broken hand. he didn't tell anybody about it. We didn't find out about it till last March. So, you know, I think Worthy is a fantastic football player, and I think he will also be in the first round because
the frame I worry about because it feels sure. JJ Nelson like.
Yeah. Right, but he's just a much better player than that.
Oh, obviously.
And JJ was a good player in the group of five ranks. He was 10 pounds lighter than Worthy, too. And Worthy, to me, is just – he's a dog. He breaks tackles. He is not afraid to block. He's a football player. I like him a lot. I thought that when he ran that time, he would go top 15 because nobody's really expecting that right now, right? But this is the fastest guy ever at the combine. And Mel Kiper on his podcast, I think it's called First Draft, he was the first guy I heard mention right after the combine. We could see Worthy in the 15 to 20 range.
That's crazy.
So I felt vindicated. Yeah.
What about, you know, a guy that was bigger, but he's huge. Would anyone be disappointed in getting Keon Coleman?
I love Keon Coleman. I think that he's so acrobatic with catches. He's a clear, natural athlete. He was a D1 basketball player recruit, and he played some D1 basketball at Michigan State, which if anyone has been following college basketball for the last 30 years,
they're a really good program.
Yeah, they don't just let anybody play on that team. So, I mean, I'm not saying he was prolific in basketball. Ultimately, he came off basketball and just stuck to football. But, man, I think Keon Coleman is a really good player. I'm not concerned about his 4.6 40. I'm looking at that. This is where that gauntlet comes in, where he didn't break stride and got up to 20 miles an hour and ran that gauntlet, caught everything. And then in some of the fade drills, you can see he has soft hands. He has soft feet. He's not you mentioned Brendan Rice, Jess, and he has, like, a really hard running style. Steve Smith pointed this out on his podcast that Brendan Rice kind of runs like Isaiah Pacheco, which I thought was funny because it's, like, a lot of effort going into those runs. And you still have a fast guy, but he's running hard. And Coleman is like a glider. And, you know, I'm not worried about his speed. In fact, as a Browns fan, I'm hoping that the NFL's down on him so that he gets to 54.
Well, yeah, that'd be great because I keep seeing it, and maybe it's something Seth said on our show a while back. I can't help but see someone like Anquan Boldin, and he's slightly more athletic, like, than mm-hmm. Anquan Boldin. And Anquan Boldin, you know, he's borderline Hall of Fame. He was a dog. There wasn't anything he couldn't do. And you know, obviously, like, as you get the helmet comp, obviously, because he's also a Florida State guy.
Sure.
But yeah, and so I see, you know, if someone is, you know, wanting a receiver in round two, you end up with Keon Coleman. That's
can you
a
imagine?
Team that's...
I mean, most years you would be like, wow, this is insane.
Right. Yes, that some team is going to be well rewarded for, and Anquan also was a second rounder.
Right.
Back in the day.
He was a full 10th of a second slower than Coleman, too. I mean,
his combine was, his 40 was terrible. But, like, if you watched him, you watched him on the field in the NFL, he wasn't a slow player.
No. And I think that's one of the good things that we're getting is the GPS data, because then we don't just have to go on 40. I know Seth, I think Seth mentioned in passing Audric Estime. He ran a 4.71. That's not ideal for a running back, but the jumps show that he has explosiveness. He's a 220-pound guy. And the tape shows that he has breakaway speed when he's playing football.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we look at. I mean, we love the combine. We talk about it every year, but it's not the end all be all. And it doesn't set us into panic mode when a guy who's clearly gifted and talented runs a slightly slower 40 than we want. What if Coleman would have run a 4.57, would anyone even be talking about it?
No.
Right?
No.
Four hundredths of a second.
And that's that you can't see that. Like, you literally cannot see that difference.
No, you have to get the simulcam out to make sure, right? Like they did with John Ross and Xavier Worthy.
Right. As we move to the tight ends, this year is it Brock Bowers just way above everybody else? Is that how it is? And Seth kind of called it. Seth called it last week on our show, is that you figure that with they kind of manipulate their draft stock. And so he didn't work out, obviously, but he weighed in, which is what you kind of needed so that you could show – so he could show he's the right size. But he didn't work right out, and so he'll work out at his pro day when he's – and he probably won't weigh in there, showing that he's right. Leaned down. So like he weighs in, he's 6'3", 243, so you've got the right size. You've got all the physical traits that you want. He didn't do anything combine. But Bowers, I mean, is he that far and above every other tight end in this class?
For sure, the NFL's eyes, he is. I mean, so he came into Indy. He came into Indy after a diet of airport food and bottled water to get to that 243. And Seth is right. Like, he was going to come in over 240. So he hit the weigh-in and not work out. But I think he's very clearly a fast guy. And even if he plays at 230, like, I've kind of the school of thought, like, who cares? He's still pretty dynamic.
And is he going to be a better receiver than an inline guy?
Yeah, he definitely, because he's small for a tight end, and that's just not what he's best at. So I think anyone who's drafting him is going to try and get him involved early and often, like Sam Laporta for Detroit. And you see a lot of value in that. That's a first round pick. That's not maybe a top 10 pick, depending on the rest of the makeup of the class. And I still think Bowers might fall out of the top 10, even though a lot of big draft guys are putting him as a like top 5 overall player. But the reality is we're going to see a lot of receivers and offensive line, and then a couple of pass rushers and going ahead of him. And then probably maybe one corner or something like that. And somebody's going to be like, well, somebody really got to steal with Bowers. Yeah, to a point, but tight end's kind of a weird position when it comes to the NFL. Laporta was so unique, and Kincaid to a lesser degree, how good they were, how productive they were as rookies. You don't see that as much with the tight end position, but I think the NFL's kind of wising up and saying like, all right, we can't get him on the field to block Micah Parsons, but we can put him out in the slot and catch 80 passes.
Yeah.
So the NFL teams are kind of wising up to it. I would say Bowers is number one tight end with a bullet, but I wouldn't put him in like my top 5 overall players. And I don't, you know, I don't really rank players like that. I kind of rank them by round and position.
Yeah.
And then let everyone else decide where they would take them. Cause I know that teams value, vary so much in, I'm not trying to pigeonhole guys, but, you know, he's a first-round grade for me. And I think his strategy works out well.
Well, and you look at it, I mean, you had Dalton Kincaid go 25th overall last year, mm-hmm. and he's a more productive version of Kincaid. And so I don't know if he'll be – and Kincaid didn't work out either because he was coming off a knee, right? Was it a
something?
Knee or an
ankle? Yeah.
Yeah. And so the one thing with Bowers that's concerning is not the right word. So I don't want anybody to think that. But like you look at Kincaid, he was just a little bigger in every category, right? So 6'3 and 5'8 as opposed to 6'3. He was 246 as opposed to 243. Wingspan just, you know, slightly longer, hand size slightly bigger. So with Bowers, you look at it and you say, like, what's your trump card, so to speak? Like, where are you going to be better than all of these guys? Because at the end of the day, too, it's the cost, right? And
right.
That's one of the things that Justin and I talk about all the time is, like, if you're gonna draft Brock Bowers, let's just say fifth overall, because we've heard that you know, I don't think Jim Harbaugh would do that because he doesn't block well enough to, you know, do that. But let's just say he goes fifth overall.
Harbaugh's taking all Michigan guys anyway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You look at it and you go, okay, where's this, you know, is he going to be Travis Kelce? Is he, you know, is he going to be the all-pro tight end? Because if you draft a guy fifth overall, the expectation for that position goes way, way up, whether it's wide receiver, offensive line, or anything of that nature, but especially tight end, because the production at tight end has always been, I don't want to say easy to find because we're Cardinals fans and we know how wrong that is, but like you can find a tight end on day two that's productive. You can find a David Njoku, you know, for Browns fans on day two. And
He was late first, but
was he late first?
Your point's still valid because Njoku was super young. I think he was 29th overall. So it's like, it was a tail end of the first round, kind of fifth year option in mind type of pick. So that's a little bit different. That is kind of the day two mindset where you're just like, I want that extra year. Right.
Yeah. And so you look at it and to your point, Justin, like Njoku took 5 years to break out.
it took a while. I mean, yeah, it does. And that's historically, I mentioned Laporta and Kincaid because historically it does take even top tight end prospects some time to break out because they need to block in the NFL where, you know, you saw Bowers running kind of gadget plays at Georgia where he's taking jet sweeps. That's not going to happen in the NFL. There's no tight end that can outrun an NFL defense on a jet sweep. We've definitely seen teams try it, but it's not a good strategy. You want to run a jet sweep, pick Xavier Worthy.
Right, exactly.
Come on.
And so you look at this tight end class. I mean, it's Brock Bowers, but then you have, again, a really nice grouping after that. Justin and I both like Jatavion Sanders quite a bit. He did not test as well as we had hoped, but he moves well. You know, he can do a lot of different things. He ended up, you know, just under 4.7, which was fine for his size, but, you know, not quite what we were hoping he would be. But he's more of a, you know, he's more of a slot H-back type of tight end. If you're looking more in line, you do have options. You have a guy like Cade Stover who tested extremely well, you know, and then has really good production out of Ohio State. Came in at 6'4", 247.
People criticize his blocking. I don't buy that. I've watched Cade Stover play 40-plus games. Like,
I think
he misses some blocks, but he's a dog.
But I think it's that he doesn't bury people. Like, he's not a finisher, which is what people are like, oh, I want more.
Well, because a lot of times he was asked to block and then get out into a route, too. Because he was he's the most productive Ohio State tight end since Ricky Dudley, and that's going way back. Ohio State in the Jim Tressel, Urban Meyer era, the tight ends were primarily blockers. And then Cade Stover has been pretty much the third or fourth receiver the last couple of years for Ohio State. I think Cade Stover, this is a guy who, I love that you mentioned Stover, of course, because he's an Ohio State guy, but he's a guy who played defensive end and linebacker at times at Ohio State. So very versatile guy, hard worker. He's a little older than the guys that you mentioned before him, but if you can get Stover in the fourth round, he's going to be a really good player.
And then you've got some athletic freaks in Ben Sinnett from Kansas State and Theo Johnson from Penn State. I mean, this whole group. And then, you know, then there's the reality of the situation. There's this Iowa tight end just hanging out and Eric All, right? That,
right.
And all they do is produce guys that play in the NFL for a decade and produce all the time. All
was also a Michigan transfer too. So he's
kind
of a blue blood.
Yeah, and so he came in at 6'4", 252, you know, and if you're going to play at Iowa, you better be able to run block, and boy, oh, howdy, does he do that well. So
the
knock on all
is going to be injuries, but
yeah, two season-ending.
Sticking in the Big Ten, though, we got Tip Reman from Illinois, who came in at 271 and ran a 4.64 and just really had a combine like T.J. Hawkinson. And Reman was not a guy who got a lot of targets at Illinois. That was just the nature of the offense under Brett Bielema. But I'm really intrigued by this guy. And the funny thing was, too, if you watch the tight ends workout, people were gravitating toward this guy. He was a fan favorite. He was a player favorite. Really interesting prospect to come in at 6'5", 271. And not that old. I mean, he'll be 23 to start his rookie year, but in the context of this class, not that old.
And he's an excellent, excellent blocker. So, you know, for the Cardinals, if you're looking to replace Jeff Swaim, a guy like Tip Reman on day three would be a slam dunk type of pick.
He became one of my favorite tight ends after that, after last weekend. And we don't change our rankings based on the combine alone. But what the combine does sometimes when you are playing catch up, like you and I are this year, Seth, it brings awareness. And so we're like, we got to check this guy out. And he's actually a really good player.
Let's move on to the offensive line. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the Web, on this extended edition of our offensive preview or review of the combine, we'll talk offensive linemen, another large group that's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the Web. Cardinals definitely need offensive linemen, and this is a class of pretty good offensive linemen. And there were roughly a gazillion at the combine, weren't there? And there were some really good performances, weren't there?
It was kind of historic. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you kick it off with Joel Alt. I mean, this guy is a mountain of a man at over 6'8", came in at 321 pounds, and then tested extremely well at that size and weight and what he does. It's really weird to me because the knock on Alt is that he's just not physical enough. But maybe I'm missing it. I think he's a physical guy. I just think sometimes he's so big and athletic that he just makes it look easier than it should be.
I think that's a good point. I completely agree with that assessment. He kind of makes it look easy. And, you know, you and I, Seth, have had Joe Alt pegged as the offensive tackle one throughout the entire year. And I don't think he's done anything to move us off of that. And especially when, you know, you look at the high-profile games that he played, people that are disparaging him, they're saying he's too tall and he leans too much. But I don't really see that. And the leaning is something I really look at, but he to me, he kind of engulfs players most of the time because he's so big. And I think he's a perfect left tackle. I don't care. I mean, height is more important than arm length when it comes to left tackles, and he makes the mark on both of those. But one of the things I always go back to is Joe Thomas saying that it's about having good feet, and it's about having like basketball player feet. When, like, if you imagine a basketball player playing defense, and I think Joe Alt has that. So he's very much like, all you have to do when you're that big and you're that tall and you're that athletic, just stay in front of the guy. And he does that. I don't see him getting beat with, he's not getting beat with cross the face, inside moves. Yeah, sure. Every tackle gets beat from time to time. And the offensive line guys, those guys are big dudes and they play every snap. It's not like defense where there's rotations to give guys breathers. The offensive line guys play every snap. Yeah, maybe he gets beat sometimes when he's gassed, but it's very infrequent to me. I think he's probably in most classes, he's a top five pick.
It's interesting to me because you look at this class, and then if you're the Cardinals and somebody either trades in front of, or one of the teams in front decide not to go quarterback and take Marvin Harrison Jr., the guy that I want to walk away with is Joe Alt. Like, I like Malik Nabers. I like Rome Odunze, but I'm taking Joe Alt because I think he's that good. Like, I think he's the second best non-quarterback player in this class. And it's baffling to me that there's just such a, I don't know, such a pushback on him. If the Cardinals trade back, Jess, the guy that I want out of this group is Talisi Fuaga, the Oregon State offensive tackle. He is, first off, he is a kind of a refrigerator, basically, at right tackle. 6'6", 324. He tested well. He moved well. And then he's probably the meanest person in this
draft. So Seth, you guys, Seth and Jess, you guys had, for Arizona, you had Paris Johnson playing right tackle, right?
Yes.
Right.
So you take a Fuaga, you put him at right tackle, and you take Paris and put him at left.
Yeah, and that's
there's
the
not,
thing.
There's not a better couple of offensive linemen in the league.
No, that we don't like it. We have heard from people who had it sourced, supposedly, that the plan is to keep Paris at right tackle. But it also, as early as it is, it seems really weird to say that right now. So,
well, Paris gives you great versatility because he played on both sides of the line at Ohio State. So moving him to the left side would be not a big ask.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But, you know, with that in mind, you could go right tackle. And I mean, you could go left tackle with a lot of these guys and still come out big winner. So.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's how I look at that. There were some guys at the draft. There's one oddity that, you know, even Jess tweeted about today or the other day.
Olu Fashanu and his 8.5-inch hands. I have 8.5-inch hands. And I don't have big hands for like an average 5'11" human being.
Yeah, you're not 6'6 and 312 pounds. So.
Yeah, I don't think you can palm a basketball if you have 8.5-inch hands.
I cannot palm a basketball.
I think my hands are about 9.5, and it's kind of a stretch for me to do that. And but yeah, it's Fashanu had the smallest hands of any offensive tackle. He was tied for the smallest.
Anomalous
hands.
Because everything else about him, 6'6", 34-inch arms, 82 5/8-inch wingspan. The 8.5-inch hands doesn't make sense at all. It feels like a mistake, but clearly it's not a mistake. But, you know, talking to my son, I asked my son about this, who played football. He didn't play offensive line. I'm like, there's really no downside to having small hands other than not being able to get caught for holding as well, because you can't hold as well. Because anything that an offensive lineman, like, their punch is not about hand size, but strength with the butt of their palm.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't be, like, I see this measurement as just a fluky thing.
It's weird.
It's like a thing that you hang your hand. Like, you don't want to hang your evaluation on this. He's not going to throw. They're not going to run an offensive tackle eligible pass with Fashanu. Okay, so we can rule that out. He probably isn't going to be an eligible receiver either with those hands. But as far as blocking, I don't think it's a big worry. And he tested really well. To me, he's like the offensive tackle three in this class. And, you know, that's, you know, he's in the offensive tackle three to five range for me. Cause I like Alt with a bullet number one. And then I like JC Latham, although he might be best suited just to play right tackle, but he's a mountain of a man too. And, especially when you look at the context of like a DeJuan Jones, who is a fourth round pick and really locked down right tackle for the Browns as a fourth rounder, because when you're playing right tackle with a right-handed quarterback, you just being so big that nobody can get around you is a plus. And I think that's what Latham brings you. And he's actually, he didn't test, but he's going to be a fine athlete. There's no worries for me. He's, it's weird to say it, but for a 340-pound guy, he's built well. Fashanu, to me, is kind of borderline tackle guard, but I still think he is a starter, like a day one starter at the NFL level. So I'm not worried about his hands. It's just weird, like you said, Jess. It's like if you saw people were saying, oh, he has Kenny Pickett hands. It's funny to think about.
Six
he has
foot
smaller
six.
Hands than like, yeah, he has smaller hands than Xavier Worthy, who weighs 165 pounds.
Yeah, a lot of these guys, like the offensive linemen, especially the tackles, the names that Seth and I've talked about on our show over the course of the last several weeks, you've got Kingsley Suamataya, you've got Amarius Mims, you've got Tyler Guyton, the kid out of Arizona, what's his name? Got to pull up
Jordan Morgan.
All those guys. Those are all really decent prospects.
Yeah, the right. One concern about Morgan ended up being that he came in with sub 33-inch arms.
Right.
That'll be the one concern with him about playing tackle.
So can he play guard, though? I mean,
I think
well, he moved well enough, at least. He right. moved well enough for that, didn't he?
I think yeah. so. I mean, he, you know, 504-40. There's plenty of athleticism, and Seth and I always talk about this too. One of the things to pay attention to when I think you're drafting offensive linemen is I like the guys that have started 3 and 4 years, because we always hear that offensive line works as a unit, and that when you have a guy who came in to, especially the bigger programs, if he started 3 or 4 years, that's a good player. That's going to be a player that can translate to the NFL.
So is
in some respect.
Is Guyton then kind of a question mark in that sense?
I would say yes, but because he only had
15 starts total,
essentially. Yeah. I think that is a concern, and you have that same concern with Amarius Mims. This is one. I'll give you a good example of why this is something to look out for. Greg Robinson, when he came out, and he was a freakish athlete coming out of Auburn. There was a learning curve there. There's more of a learning curve. I think when you have guys that have worked in a starting offensive line unit for 3 and 4 years, you have a little bit more security. It doesn't mean the guys that have only started 1 or 2 years aren't going to work out. We've seen in recent years that's not the case. But I think you have a little bit more maturity, more security if you take a guy that's had 3 and 4 years as a starter and also tests well. So, and there's a lot of guys in both categories this year. And O-line is one of the oldest position groups by my estimation, just at a glance from what I could see. You have a lot of guys who transferred, a lot of guys who took advantage of that extra COVID year. Not a knock on those guys, but it's something to keep in mind, because when you look at a J.C. Latham, who started 2 years but is only just turned 21, you have a guy in Joe Alt who started 3 years and just turned 21. And then you have Mims, who will turn 22, not old, but he'll turn 22 as a rookie, but he only started that 1 year. And then you have a guy like Troy Faletanu, from Washington who is going to be 24 and really only started 1 year. So it's something to consider. And he moved like a tight end. I mean, he was a freak at the combine.
And this group has so many different things. I mean, we talked about the tackles. Then you've got the guards. I mean, you've got Cooper Beebe, or interior lineman, I guess we can say. You've got Cooper Beebe who, you know, depending on where you look, he's a guy that's going to go early. Then you've got a Jackson Powers Johnson who's, you know, being talked about in the same breath as like
Is Cooper Beebe a center? Like, should he be a center? Because he's kind of small at 6'3".
He came in at
31 and a half inch arms.
Yeah, but he came in at 322. I mean,
yeah,
his athletic testing
really well.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. His athletic testing was good enough. I think he can play center or guard. Jackson Powers Johnson, I think, can come in and play either. Mm-hmm. You know, he came in at 6'3", 328.
He was another guy that didn't start that much, though.
Yeah, guy that I loved, though, this weekend, man, and he was Amarius Mims, and I don't know how they confused him outside of their last name, both starts with M. But Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State, this guy blew away the combine process. Again, he was the actual guy that ran the elite short shuttle, right? Like
he did, but it was not the 4.33. The 4.33 came from a lot of the centers. There were a couple centers. Dylan McMahon from NC State ran the 4.33 short shuttle, but yeah, to your point though, there was the mix up with McCormick, and he ran a 4.45, which is elite.
Yeah.
And a very good marker for success, and a guy who was a 4-year starter, by the way.
And then the other guy this guy blew the short shuttle out of the water, which we've determined is probably the most important testing for an offensive lineman, especially interior, and he comes from good stock, Tanner Bortolini from Wisconsin. Now, he measured in a little lighter than you'd want at 303. But we got a guy, and I don't ever like making these comparisons because, obviously, you're talking about a Hall of Fame level type of guy. But Jason Kelsey retired today. His number was even better than Bortolini's. I think he ran a 4.16, if I remember.
That's nuts.
Yeah, beyond insane in terms of what they tested. 4.14, so even better than what I gave him. I mean, it legitimately nuts. But Bortolini also had a better 3-cone, which, you know, again, is a similar testing measurement, right, to that at 7.16, which is, again, insane to think that a guy that's 300 pounds moves that well. He started up and down the line at Wisconsin. He's not really getting a lot of conversation out here because you've got guys like Grant Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, Zach Frazier ranked ahead of him. But it just feels like Bortolini's really being overlooked for a guy that's played a lot and then had elite testing numbers.
I think he's a little bit of a project because really you only had 2 years as a starter from him. And coming out of that program, though, you know he's been coached up. Wisconsin produces really good offensive line prospects. So this is a player with all that elite testing that you mentioned, and he ran a sub-5.40 as well. And I think he has the versatility to play guard or center. So this is a player you're going to get on day 3 in the 5th to 7th round range, in my estimation. And you might have a potential starter coming out of that. I think he needs some work. He does end up on the ground quite a bit. I had an opportunity to watch a lot of his games because I'm in Big Ten country, but there's something there with that. I mean, when a guy tests as well as a tight end at offensive line size, you have to take notice. And not only does he test as well as a tight end, but he tests as well as some of the best tight ends. So there's something there to it. And I, certainly if I'm drafting offensive line in the fifth to seventh round, that's what I'm looking for. It's the earlier picks where I'm wanting to have more experience starting, but later is when you can look at that athletic testing and say, okay, let's throw caution to the wind and just take guy because he's a freak.
Well, and the thing with Bortolini that really impressed me, and like you said, he really only started 2 years, mm-hmm. but he played 116 snaps as a freshman at center. And then as a sophomore, he played 303 snaps along the offensive line, but 229 at right tackle. And then as a junior last year, he played 648 snaps, but he played 411 at left guard.
Right.
And then this year, yeah, it was mostly center, 868 snaps, all of them at center. So like, this is a guy that when you talked about, you know, Paris Johnson earlier, like having that experience on both sides of the ball, this is a guy that's played right tackle, left guard and center. And so, and like you said, then you have that elite athleticism, like experience intangibles, like he kind of fits what you're looking for in a day three pick.
Yeah, for sure. He's never going to play tackle, I don't think, in the NFL.
No.
Because his arms are really short, and he's not that tall. Yeah. But you do have the versatility between guard and center, which I think is important to your point. And so, yeah, this is a player, day three, he can end up being a starter for your team, or at the very least, if you have an injury on your line, he's going to be able to plug in at three spots on your O-line. And once he gets used to his teammates, you won't miss a beat.
Anybody else of note, either on at tackle or on the interior, before we close things out and then take a rest before we do our next show?
Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. I will throw him out there because he's just about to turn 21 years old, and he has been a 2-year starter, I believe, at Notre Dame. And he tested pretty well, like not elite, but when you're talking about a guy who's a right tackle and opposite of Joe Alt, this is a player that Seth and I talked about prior to the season, where we said Notre Dame doesn't just have one good offensive tackle, they have two. And Fisher, at just 2 years as a starter, but 2 years as a starter at a high-end program and only being 21 years old on draft day, running a 5.2, and with the good short shuttles, with the good three cone, and at 6'6", 310 with 34-inch arms, he's a guy you can work with. I like Blake Fisher a lot.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Ups here at Podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, or best hour and a half of Cardinals talk on the web, as we wrap up this edition of the show, episode 521, with Justin Higdon from the Original Draft Breakdown podcast talking offensive players at the NFL Combine. We will have in a couple of days, we'll drop our show about the defensive players. We'll be back in a couple of days. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.